Are you looking to upgrade your game on and off the field? Triple Crown Jewelry makes the cleanest jewelry in the game so you can show your style. Their jewelry is made by athletes for athletes with durability and style in mind. They make the best-selling number pendants and chains that you're already seeing on the field. Whether your style is gold, matte black, or silver, Triple Crown Jewelry has what you need. Personally, I'm more about the silver, but Triple Crown is ready for whatever your style. The chains look great. They're durable with a shine that stands out. And when you put it on, it has a nice heft to it. You can feel the quality. Your number is yours. It's part of your identity, and Triple Crown knows that. They have numbers from 00 to 99 available, so you can show your number, your identity, on and off the field. Their jewelry will never turn your neck green or fade. They're tarnish-resistant and made to last. These aren't just accessories. They're a statement of your dedication and love for the game. And that shine is unmatched. And in addition to choosing between the three different finishes, you can also choose from a variety of chains, including rope, Franco, and Cuban chains. So try it yourself. If you're ready to elevate your drip on and off the field, get some new drip at triplecrownjewelry.com and get a special discount just for our listeners. Get 25% off your first order site-wide with promo code BA2022. That's BA2022 at triplecrownjewelry.com. And by doing so, you're supporting our podcast. Orders are shipped the same or next business day from New Jersey, and orders over $50 get free shipping. Don't miss out on the opportunity to make a statement both on and off the field. Go to triplecrownjewelry.com and lead the league in drip. Hey, everyone. Baseball America College Podcast. Got a three-man crew today. We've got Mike Lanana, we got Teddy Cahill, and I'm J.J. Cooper joining you today. And before we do that, we do want to thank you for tuning into today's Baseball America College Podcast. Our college podcasts are sponsored by Health IQ. Health IQ is helping health-conscious people get lower rates on their life insurance. Visit healthiq.com/BA to see if you qualify. We have a lot to talk about this week because we had a wild top 25 meeting. Last week was probably the simplest top 25 meeting I can ever remember. Hey, let's just do chalk through wherever.
Yeah.
Not the case today, Mike.
No, last night was a little bit more difficult. I think we all had, you know, varying iterations of our top 25, you know, wildly different depending on who we liked, who we saw, and whatnot. If you look at the poll this week, if you haven't pulled it up yet, go on our website and check it out. There's a lot different. There's a new number one. The top five has been, the top 10 has been reorganized in a lot of ways. We have a few teams who we thought really highly of in the preseason who have now dropped out or in the back end of the rankings. There's been a lot that has changed. And, you know, this is the fun part, really, of the college season to me when, you know, the expectations, you're worried less about the preseason expectations and you're focusing more on what's actually happening on the field. And you have some surprises. You have some, you know, teams that don't surprise. I mean, we all expected Oregon State to be really good this year, and so far they have been really good. But Teddy, I mean, what do you make of just our call last night, the new top 25, and the college baseball landscape at this point in the season?
Well, I mean, starting in the midweek when Florida lost two games to Central Florida, you know, I knew at that point that things were going to start to, you know, maybe get shaken up a little bit. At that point, I wasn't ready to say that Florida was definitely moving off of one. I honestly wasn't even ready to say that, you know, up until we did it last night. The margins were very close there. But, you know, I think that kind of set the tone for the week that Central Florida went out and they swept that midweek home and home. And then, you know, it just kept rolling. And, you know, Florida State lost at three. And we had a top 10 series for the first time this year. And, you know, obviously that leads to some shakeup. And the three teams in the top 25 were here in the Dodger Stadium Classic. And, you know, that means that there's more shakeup. So we got to that point, and the ACC starting conference play is a big part of that. And, you know, ultimately by the time Sunday night came around, it was clear that it had become a week of change. And really the first 3 weeks of the season hadn't been that. You know, yeah, we chalked through 17 last week. I think the week before we chalked through like 12.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, it just kind of had been a very slow start in terms of the season, in terms of upsets. There just really weren't that many. And, you know, that has changed here in week four. And it's a new look 25. But, I mean, in several ways, some teams did exactly what we expected them to do. You know, Oregon State took care of business with Fullerton. You know, after the midweek slip up, Florida bounced back for a sweep, and you know, Clemson continued to roll. And So I think that while there is some reorganization, there are also some teams that have been consistently doing what, you know, we figured they would this year.
No doubt, no doubt. And you mentioned Clemson. They made one of the bigger jumps this week. They've gone from 10 to number 5 in our poll. They're off to a great start this year, coming off a weekend sweep of Georgia Tech in their ACC opener this weekend. Before that, they won a series against rival South Carolina, which is always a lot of fun, that series. And they also had a nice series sweep against Dallas Baptist. So they're doing very well. Those are sort of the key reasons why they've moved up to number 5. And speaking of the top 5, we have a newcomer in Kentucky, a team that we all really liked coming into this year. And so far, I mean, they jumped from number 8 to number 4. They had a marquee series this weekend against Texas Tech, who was previously number 5, now dipped to number 8. And fortunately for us, J.J. Cooper was there for us. And J.J., what did you see?
I'm really impressed with this Kentucky team. We all knew coming into the season, I think we felt very comfortable that they were going to pitch. I mean, when you have a rotation like they do, Jelly, Thompson, you know, Justin Lewis as a Sunday starter is, that's a luxury very few teams have. A legit bullpen, you know, with Mockamer and Hockey, and we knew that they would pitch. This lineup, I do think, is actually better. They lost, you know, they lost legit hitters last year, you know, right, from last year's team. First rounder in Evan White, second baseman Riley Mahan. I mean, Zach Reeks, who was a really good, really productive senior last year. And that, you, all that being said, I think this is a better lineup this year, and that's one of the things you saw this weekend. It's not because they have a guy. I don't think there's that. You know, Brent Rooker last year from his state, it's like, okay, you just went into every game against them knowing we can't let this guy beat him. I don't think Kentucky has a guy where you say we can't let Tristan Pompey or we can't let TJ Collette or we can't let Cole Cottom beat us. But what they have is, you go through and it's like, when does this lineup end? Because it's in the first, you go 1, 2, 3, and all these guys are putting together good at-bats. They draw walks. They have enough power to scare you. And then you go 4, 5, 6, and you go, okay, this is still going. And then you go 7, 8 in the lineup, and you're going, man, this is, you know, Ryan Johnson is really good. I mean, he's, you know, he's putting together good swings. They go left, right, so there's really, they've got a guy coming up pretty much, it seems like, at all times, who's got the platoon advantage, and you, really is difficult when you go to the pen to match up with them because they have enough, a nice blend of lefties and righties. But the thing that really stood out is just how locked in they are in at bat after bat, pitch after pitch. And so they really, what they did with Texas Tech is they wore them down. I mean, that's Davis Martin, John McMillan, that's a good 1-2. Even without Stephen Gingery, that's a really good 1-2. Mm-hmm. And Davis Martin was done after 3 because they ran him up. He was averaging over 20 pitches an inning. John McMillan, I thought, pitched reasonably well, but every time he made a mistake, they jumped on it, and he was done after 5. The thing we'll have to watch is they're really locked in. They're really playing at a very high level, very intense, very focused right now. You don't want to be peaking at this point.
Right.
You know, they,
it's not going to get any easier.
Right. Teddy, you saw them last week too. The thing you don't want if you're Kentucky is you don't want to look back and say, man, we were really rolling at the start of March. But they have all the components. I mean, we've got them 4 now. They have all the components that you would look for, not just in an Omaha team, but a team that can do something when they get to Omaha. Because, again, there's not a – defensively, I also think, even though Evan White was – as good a first baseman as you'll ever see defensively. But defensively, I think they're better up the middle a little bit this year. This is just really, you know, Ken, you saw him last week too, Teddy. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I it's definitely a valid point that you don't want to be peaking in mid-March, but I don't think they are. I think there's still room for improvement on this team. You know, Luke Heyer is not going to hit 400 this year. That's what he's hitting right now, 400 with 8 home runs. That's not happening. So I mean,
he's
some
on
of these
pace
guys
to hit 400 with 25, 30. You know, that's really good.
Yeah.
Maybe they do have Brent Rooker.
Some of these guys are going to come back to earth a little bit. But, you know, I mean, they've done this. I know they had Pompey this weekend, but, you know, a lot of the last 2 weeks, they haven't had him. So, you know, getting him more involved has to, you know, you figure that only helps the team. You know, and I think that there's still some things that they can work out at the back end of the bullpen. You know, Hockey is has only been pitching for 2 weeks now because he was hurt as well. So, you know, I feel like there's still some room here. You know, Zach Thompson hasn't hit his stride yet. And I think that as good as the offense is going now, the team still has room to get better, which is what you need to do at, you know, throughout the season. You can't be what you are on March, 12th. You can't do that on May 12th or on June 12th and expect to contend for what they're trying to contend for.
The one thing I did want to just touch on Texas Tech real quick, which is they did come back and win on Sunday, which was, again, against Justin Lewis, so that was a good win for them. The other thing is I do think I still was impressed with this Texas Tech team. I think that they're going to be really, and you know, we still have them ranked top 10. I mean, we think they're really good, even losing Gingery. Josh Young is just a really, you know, fun third baseman to watch. They also have a deep lineup. The thing I'll be interested to see with them, they did not play at their best this weekend. I don't think, I mean, again, if you give up three squeeze bunts in a row, and you don't cover any of them properly, and so three back-to-back-to-back run score, and you don't get an out, that's probably a sign that you weren't playing at your absolute peak. You know, that's but I do think, again, I think it was more of Kentucky played well. And the other thing I will say, not trying to make excuse for Texas Tech, but it was about 38 degrees, 40 degrees, all, you know, for the first two games. So they were not playing in ideal conditions as well.
You know, the thing
I will say, though, for that, I mean, when I went out to Lubbock last year, it was the start of May, and it was not warm. So, you know, if we're talking about a Texas school having to deal with elements, like, Texas Tech is the one that is best equipped to do it. But I think, to your point on the bunt, some of that is just the youth on that team. You know, yes, Josh Young played every day at third base last year, and, you know, they have some experience, you know, kind of experienced players, but they're still young, and, you know, that kind of – you know, bunt defense, that's what you're trying to do. You're trying to put pressure on the defense, and, you know, with young defenders, you never know. So, you know, that's an area, defense in general is an area for Texas Tech that you kind of have to look at, just considering what they lost last year. But, you know, that's another team that plenty of room to still get better, doing very well now, but plenty of room to improve.
Yeah, and, you know, the thing that strikes me about both of those teams, and this is the case certainly the last few years with Texas Tech especially, is both teams have faced really tough schedules to this point, and it's not going to get any easier. You look at Texas Tech, I mean, they went into this series after sweeping a four-game series against a very good South Alabama team, and now they're going to Louisville not once but twice midweek this week, which is going to be very difficult before they start Big 12 play against Baylor. And then you look at Kentucky, and they're playing probably the best series in the country, certainly up there against Arkansas this weekend coming up. That's going to be a lot of fun. Arkansas, of course, was the team on our college preview cover a few weeks ago. I'm sure all of you who are listening have one of those in your hands right now and are thumbing through it. So that's going to be another big series. But the fact that both of these teams have competed as well as they have against increasingly difficult competition, I think bodes really well for both teams as they head into conference play now.
Yeah, I mean, you got to admire the scheduling philosophies there. You know, Tim Tadlock at Texas Tech will take them anywhere, and Nick Mangione definitely doing his part to take Kentucky with some difficult schedules. And, yeah, I mean, you got to figure that a series like this, a road trip like this for Texas Tech, you know, they play two midweek against Louisville. You know, this can only help them going forward. And, you know, to get out and challenge yourself is, you know, it's a good thing because you really find out what you've got. And that, I've talked with Tadlock before about his scheduling philosophies, and early part of the season, you know, he wants to play a lot of games. He wants to challenge them. He wants to find out what he has so that when he gets into Big 12 play, he knows and the kids know what they're doing.
Well, that philosophy has clearly worked over the last few years for Tadlock and that team, and so far so good for them this year, even though they lost this past weekend. But, you know, speaking of road trips and stacked schedules, Teddy, you've been to a couple tournaments now these past couple weeks. You had another big one this past weekend, of course, the Dodger Stadium College Classic. I know weather didn't cooperate, which only you would go to Southern California and deal with rain. the past couple of years doing this. I'm not sure what's going on there, but what was your take of the overall competition? And it seems like Vanderbilt especially, you know, put together, you know, really these last couple of weeks, they've played a tough schedule, and it seems like they've fared pretty well in these tournaments.
Yeah, I feel like Vanderbilt is not entirely blameless in this weather situation either. They last year when they were in California on opening weekend, that was the weekend that everything got crazy and they had to let them open the season on Thursday as a result. So anyway, Vanderbilt with washouts in Southern California, they're used to that.
That's fair.
But yeah, the tournament here was it was good despite Saturday getting rained out. You know, USC and UCLA host their two games, and then it moves to Dodger Stadium on Sunday. And TCU and Vanderbilt both won on Friday night. And, Vanderbilt then went out and they beat TCU on Sunday. And they looked really good in both of those games. I thought they played well all-around games. I know they still have room for improvement as well. They're playing so many underclassmen. Last weekend, Vanderbilt lost a couple tough games. They lost a really tough game on Wednesday at Long Beach. But they were able to bounce back at the end of this trip. And, they've been on the road for, I think it's 11 days. And for their young players, and there are so many of them up and down the lineup and throughout the pitching staff, to be able to find that resolve at the end of a road trip to win two games against two pretty tough teams in UCLA and TCU, I mean, those are two ranked teams for a reason. I thought that was impressive, and it puts them in a good situation here going into the start of SEC play when they'll be back out on the road this weekend at Mississippi State. But I was just came away over the last couple of weeks very impressed with Vanderbilt's underclassmen. I mean, we know that they're talented. They had the number one ranked recruiting class this year. The sophomore class was another top 15 class. They're very talented, of course, but they're doing it, and they're doing it with a lot of them in the lineup at the same time. On Friday night, Vanderbilt used 11 players. 7 of them were underclassmen, and they can have even more than that in the lineup if they want to at times. They're still figuring out who fits best where. But some of the constants I've seen over the week are that Pat DeMarco and J.J. Bleday play every day in the outfield, and they hit in the middle of the order, and they do a really good job. And, that's a freshman and a sophomore, and they're two of Vanderbilt's best players instantly. And, the pitching staff is very underclass dominant as well. So it's an exciting group. It's a group that's still learning about itself. They still don't know what their best lineup is, I don't think. Or they're still trying to work through some things there. But I know that Tim Corbin, he told me yesterday that they learned as much as they could in the last 11 days, that there's as much growth as there could have been in the last 11 days. So I think this trip has been very beneficial for them. And, it has them coming off of these two big wins in LA. I think it has them in a really good spot here as they get into conference play.
Yeah, I don't think there's any doubt. I mean, obviously, you've had the first-person look these last couple weekends, but just looking at what they've done, I mean, it's one thing to grow while out there losing games against tough competition, but to grow while also winning bodes really well for this team, especially, as you said, they have Mississippi State coming up on the docket, and, things are going to ramp up with Southeastern Conference play coming up. So certainly, things are looking good, with Vanderbilt, which isn't much of a surprise given what that coaching staff has done there. But, another team I wanted to ask you about, Teddy, while we're still talking about this tournament, is USC. They were the one team in this tournament that aren't currently ranked, and, they're probably not going to be in our rankings, at least not anytime soon. But given what they've done so far this year, they played a tough series at Arkansas. They won one of those games, lost another one in one-run fashion. Obviously they had the win against UCLA last night. There's a lot of young talent on that roster. How close are they, do you think, to being, one of these teams that maybe we talk about in the top 25? Do you think that's in their ceiling this year, or what is kind of your view of the Trojans at this point?
Well, I'll tell you how close they were last week. They got walked off on at Arkansas, and if they'd held on to that game at Arkansas, they very well might have been ranked a week ago. It was close then, and I didn't know as much then as I know now. I was just, watching that those scores come through and watching the final couple innings while I was in the press box in Houston, and I was a little surprised at that point. But having seen them up close, there's talent on this team, and we knew that. It's a team that hasn't been to regionals the last couple of years, and maybe got overshadowed a little bit by some of these other Pac-12 teams coming into the year, but they've been able to get some of these young players integrated into the lineup quickly. They're banged up right now. They're missing some key guys, but they've really fought the last couple weekends. That going into Baum Stadium is not easy, and they very nearly came out of it with a series win. They got beat up pretty good by Texas or by TCU on Friday night. The game just really got away from them. I guess I was at UCLA that night, so I didn't see them then. But my understanding is the game just kind of got away from them. They lost 10-0. Well, they were able to bounce back to win that game against their rivals in Dodger Stadium on Sunday. They got down in that game twice. It was only a run, but they twice had to come back against a good UCLA pitching staff. And then Lars Nootbaar, sends a homer in the eighth inning to give them a lead, and they finish it off, closing the door in the ninth. And, I thought that was just the way that the turnaround in a week from, losing in a walk-off fashion at Arkansas to being able to hold on to that late lead against UCLA, I thought that was impressive. I thought that showed some fortitude and some growth from that team. And it's an important development, I think, as they head into conference play. They got Washington State, or no, they have Utah. UCLA has Washington State. They have Utah coming to Dado Field this weekend. I think that's a nice opener to conference play for USC. And then, they really ramp up. I think they're at Stanford the next weekend. So, they can get into conference play. Utah is the worst team in the Pac-12 right now, and maybe build some momentum going into the rest of the conference action. But I don't know how close they are to the top 25 right now. They seem – it's an intriguing group, though. Like, ultimately, I'm very intrigued by what I saw. Jamal O'Gwin, Lars Nootbaar, they have some power. They're not totally going yet. I think the offense just kind of does enough, and I think that the pitching staff is solid. Kyle Hurt looked very good. He was supposed to start yesterday because of the rain out. They wound up using him out of the bullpen in relief of Quentin Longry, who was solid, and he was probably even better than that against Arkansas. I thought Kyle Hurt showed some flashes. I mean, he's still a freshman, so you're working through some things there. And then Connor Lund at the back end, except for that Arkansas loss, has been very good this season for them. He has 5 saves already. I thought he came into a really tough spot yesterday. Runners on first and second in the eighth inning. He gets a strikeout to end that threat. And then in the ninth inning, UCLA got it going a little bit, got Chase Strumpf to the plate with runners on the corners and 2 outs, and Longry strikes him out to end the game. And so I think having him on the back end really helps some things. They're still piecing some things together, I think, and some of that is the injuries. But I do think the Trojans are a team to watch, that it's a team that potentially could make some noise in the Pac-12 this season.
Right. No, I think you've laid out their case really well, and it's certainly a team that I'm watching going forward. They're a team that, the last few years we've really liked coming into the season, and for whatever reason haven't been able to put it all together. But so far to this point in the year, there's a lot to like there about Dan Hubbs' team, and I'm curious to see how they do as Pac-12 play starts. But now a word from our sponsor, Health IQ. How would you like to save money for being active and physically fit? Like saving money on your car insurance for being a good driver, Health IQ saves you money on your life insurance for living a health-conscious lifestyle. To see if you qualify, get your free quote today at healthiq.com/BA or call 1-800-549-1664 to talk to a Health IQ agent. Mention the promo code BA for savings. And J.J. Cooper has left us for the second half of this podcast. So, Teddy, it's just you and me at this point. And I think now's a good time as ever to look at the rest of our top 25 and some of the other key changes that took place on the back end. And there was really, a lot of shuffling, a lot. You know, the big thing that strikes me and that I'm sure a lot of people have noticed is that both UNC and Virginia, you know, UNC was our preseason number six. Virginia is a team that we've had in the teens in our rankings since the beginning of this season. Both of those teams have dropped out this weekend. UNC lost a really tough series at Louisville. And that alone isn't enough to boot them from the rankings, but given they're 8-7 at this point and really just a tough, inconsistent start for them, they've been a little banged up on the mound as well. It's been a rough start for the Tar Heels. And then Virginia lost a series at Duke this weekend. Duke looked very impressive in that series. They joined the rankings at number 20. They're 12-3 to this point in the season. Virginia drops out of those rankings after that loss. They're a team that, similar to UNC, hasn't really gotten it going yet, and they've also dealt with some significant injury issues. Losing Jake McCarthy for 6 to 8 weeks is not good for Virginia. He's really an igniter at the top of that lineup, a lot of speed, a veteran guy, had a really big summer, and the top prospect on that team from a position player standpoint. Losing him is not good, and then they lost Cam Simmons earlier. You know, he was a guy who was expected to be a big middle of the order bat for him, and they're without him for the entire season. So, you know, there's some reasons for concern with both of those programs right now. And in their place, we brought in Duke at number 20. East Carolina comes in at number 21, a team that a couple weeks ago took down UNC in a really good showing and has continued to thrive at this point. They're 12-3. Sam Houston State comes in, another team that's really so far faced premium competition and held its own. NC State comes in at number 23. Illinois comes in at number 24. And we keep San Diego State at number 25. Teddy, I mean, what do you make of these changes and kind of the picture in the ACC and just the feel with these programs as a whole at this point?
Yeah, I mean, I think the headline for me coming out of the first weekend of ACC play was Louisville looks for real. Mm-hmm. You know, the way that, you know, they played North Carolina at home, Louisville up to this point had played just one game against a team that made the NCAA tournament last year. And if you look at their schedule, none of the teams they'd played thus far this season, we projected in the preseason to make the tournament. So, you know, it was an iffy schedule. But Louisville typically does that, and they, you know, pile up confidence, they pile up wins, and then they come into conference play with a full head of steam. And they did that again this year. And, you know, so North Carolina shows up, and Louisville wins the first two games, and they, you know, they got down early in both of those games, but they're able to, you know, to come back and secure a couple solid wins against, you know, North Carolina's record does not indicate that it's a good team right now. It indicates that it's a mediocre team, but I really still believe that the Tar Heels are a better team than that. And, you know, I think that the series win is going to be a really solid series win for Louisville. And I just think it was an important thing. They play something like six sophomores in their everyday lineup. And one of those guys is a guy that I would say got regular action last year. And that's shortstop Tyler Fitzgerald. And he didn't really see regular action at shortstop because they had Devin Harrison. So even he is playing in a new role. So I think that it was just good from that standpoint to get those young kids, you know, into ACC play against a good team and showing that they can still thrive as a team without Brendan McKay and without Harrison and without Cade McClure and everyone else they've lost over the last couple of years. So to me, that really stood out. And I think that Louisville going forward, the schedule is still very difficult. They've got a tricky trip to Wake Forest this weekend. And then there's Clemson, Florida State, and North Carolina State coming for them. But I think it was a good start for the Cardinals. they're going to have, they have a lot still to come here. The schedules, the ACC schedules are really front loaded for them. But, you know, I think the pitching staff is looking good. And, you know, I was talking to Dan McDonald last night, and, you know, he's expecting the pitching staff to get maybe even better as they get healthier. They're going to get Drew Bennett back hopefully this week. He's kind of been on the shelf since opening weekend with the shoulder injury that they thought was good to go, but they decided to be a little more conservative, give him some more time to recover in the early part of the season. And then Michael McAveen, who started his freshman year last year in the weekend rotation, should be good to come back from Tommy John surgery sometime in the next few weeks. So you add those guys into a situation, a pitching staff that has already been pretty solid this season, you know, it starts to look very exciting for the Cardinals.
Right. No, certainly. You know, it was, as much as we like them coming into this year, there's no question that, you know, there was a lot up in the air there with how much they lost talent-wise to the draft and just how many new faces they were relying on in that lineup and on that pitching staff. So certainly I would agree with you that this past weekend was really is the biggest test to this point, and they passed it with flying colors. And it's going to be interesting to see how they fare this week, because it really, the competition, as we mentioned earlier, they're facing Texas Tech, which is not going to be an easy two games in the midweek, and then going to Wake Forest, who kind of an odd season at this point. They're still below 500, but they just won a huge series against Florida State, who is the number 3 team heading into this weekend. And, you know, their team, the Demon Deacons, they certainly have plenty of talent, a team that I talk about often, a stadium that I get to fairly often during the season. You know, starting with Griffin Roberts at the front of the rotation, I thought it was interesting they started Morgan McSweeney during the doubleheader on Saturday in one of the wins against Florida State. That was a very interesting development. And, you know, they're going to be a challenge for Louisville this weekend, so I'm certainly looking forward to seeing how they fare and how they play. And along those lines, you have Duke, another team that isn't a, you know, traditional power, so to speak, in the ACC. They're coming off a really good showing against Virginia. I had the chance to see them firsthand this weekend. Griffin Conine, just he has some of the most power in college baseball in the country, and he displayed it on Friday night at the very least. I mean, he hit a laser line drive home run in the first inning that got out in 3 seconds. I took a video of it and I timed it myself, and it was literally 3 seconds. And then his next at bat, he lines an opposite field double off the Blue Monster in left that maybe could have gotten out of some ballpark. So he's showing his power to both sides of the field. And then from a pitching standpoint, you know, if they're pitching to their ability level, Adam Lasky was, stuff-wise, wasn't great Friday night. After, you know, a start earlier this year against Bucknell, he was touching 93 in the seventh inning and threw nothing below 90. On Friday, he was a bit more upper 80s, you know, scraping 91, 92, and had a third inning where he walked 3 batters in a row and looked like things were really coming off the rails. But he regrouped and lasted 5 2/3 to pick up an ACC win, and that's really a key. I was talking with Duke coach Chris Pollard after that, and that's really a key development for them, because they've had talent on the mound. It's just been a matter of getting the composure and sort of those ACC innings in to be able to, when you don't have your best stuff, still succeed and put the team in a position to win. So that was, I thought, big for them. I was impressed with a reliever, Ethan DeCaster, that came out of the bullpen, was really funky, almost like a low 3/4 side armor kind of guy with a really heavy sink on his fastball and a sweepy slider and a really tough angle against right-handed hitters. I mean, there's a lot to like on that Duke team, and they haven't done anything wrong so far this year. They lost a series to Vanderbilt opening weekend at Vanderbilt, but they won one of those games, and that's going to look even better now with the way that Vanderbilt is playing. So I think Duke is really for real at this point. I was really impressed with my look at them, and certainly, you know, all the buzz that they've gotten from scouts leading up to the season, I could see why, just given the way that they approached Virginia and won that series this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, the big question, I think, for us coming into the year, or definitely I know for me, was what their pitching was going to look like. I knew they were going to hit I knew there was talent on the pitching staff, but it was just a matter of, like, are the kids ready to take a step forward? And so if they are, I mean, that's an incredible development for Duke. And frankly, the ACC this year is weird. I don't know what to make of it at this point. But I think one thing that I do know is that the Coastal Division, and I am looking at this, so I know that Duke is in the Coastal Division. I don't actually know their divisions. But the Coastal Division is the weaker division this year. Mm-hmm. You know, you've got in that division Virginia and North Carolina, who, again, we think are probably still good teams, better than what the records maybe indicate at this point.
They have the talent to turn it around, certainly.
For sure. But, you know, you're looking at Georgia Tech, which is also scuffling out of the gate. Miami's under 500 right now. Virginia Tech is not a team that, and Pittsburgh, those are not teams that we're expecting to contend this year. You know, that's their division. And it feels like it might be there for the taking. You know, and that means that their ACC schedule is a little lighter as a result. You know, in the other division, you're looking at having to, you know, contend with Clemson and Florida State and Louisville and North Carolina State. Like, those are where the ranked teams in the ACC are, except for Duke. You know, so I think that helps Duke this year. And, you know, I was talking about how front-loaded Louisville's schedule is. Well, now that Duke's passed Virginia, they got Miami this weekend at home, and then it's Pittsburgh, Notre Dame. You know, so, I mean, they might be able to build up, you know, a nice head of steam here in conference play just in this first month. Just to get a nice start in March, I think would be significant for a younger team, for a team that isn't used to doing a lot of this stuff. They've made the tournament 2 years ago, but that was the first time in 50 years. They're now ranked in the Baseball America Top 25 for the first time in 20 years. So, I mean, this is a team that's doing some things that maybe it's not, you know, that they don't have a ton of experience doing. So I think having, you know, this kind of softer start now that they're past Virginia could be beneficial as they kind of learn how to deal with being in the role where they're the favorites.
Yeah, no doubt. And looking at that schedule, I mean, really the toughest thing on their schedule is a trip to Florida State in mid-April. But otherwise, this is a very doable schedule. I mean, of course, you have the sort of the in-state flair against NC State and UNC. But really, I mean, they have the trip to Pittsburgh, which is Pittsburgh's off to an 11-4 start this year. They're doing well, but that's a winnable series. A trip to Wake Forest, which is an hour and a half down the road, not much of a road trip. And as you mentioned, I mean, that they're facing the weaker division of the ACC at this point. So I think they certainly have a great chance to make a run at this thing. I think it's very much within the realm of possibility for them to, you know, be the top team in the Coastal, certainly near the top. You know, Miami is a team that has shown flashes, but they're below 500 at this point. It's not the same Miami team that we've come to know, you know, over the last previous 44 years or whatever their regional streak was before last year. So, you know, they're a young team that's still trying to find its way. So it's going to be interesting to see how that division shakes out. I think the Atlantic is definitely the stronger division at this point, without question. I've been really impressed by Clemson so far. We currently have them as the team to beat in the ACC as reflected in our rankings. And I think, given what I've seen, I certainly think they passed the eye test from that standpoint. Obviously, we really like Florida State too. You know, they're coming off the series loss to Wake Forest, but there's still no shortage of talent there in Tallahassee. So I'm curious to see how this winds up. And, you know, I'm also interested too, you know, the back end of our poll. You know, we brought in East Carolina. The American Conference is still a head scratcher. We don't have to, you know, dive down that rabbit hole right now. But we also brought in Illinois at number 24. And Illinois, I know, is a team that you wrote about, Teddy, and a team that's gotten really hot right now under Dan Hartlib. And they could be really the best team in the Big Ten behind Indiana at this point. That's how we have it in the rankings at this point.
Yeah, I mean, it's a team that, you know, we talked about a little bit on the podcast last week after their really solid showing. Their great showing. They went 3-0. That's better than solid. they're great showing up at the Dairy Queen Classic. You know, and then this week they went down and you know, played in a little tournament in Greenville, South Carolina. They really brought the bats the first couple of games. They scored, I think it was 33 runs on the weekend, and something like 30 of those were in the first 2 days against Michigan State and Furman. I think that Illinois, is a team that, they've really hit on something here in the early part of the season. They, they started a little shakily. There was some weird travel stuff on opening weekend, and then they lost the first two games of the second weekend. But after that, I mean, they really have hit on a groove, and now they're going home. They're through the first four weekends where they, have to go out on the road and play away from Champaign. But now they're going home, and they can be able to get used to those environments and get ready for the Big Ten play. And, right now, I mean, they do look like the next best team in the Big Ten. Coming into the year, I really like Nebraska. Nebraska is really beat up, although they did just win a nice series against Cal Poly. I like Maryland coming into the year. Maryland hasn't quite, figured it out yet. So it's an interesting group. In the Big Ten, I thought Minnesota would be pretty good, and they have been. But I think Illinois has really taken that step forward. There are a lot of young players in that lineup last year that are now, as Dan Hartlips told me, that they don't just want to be a year older. They want to be a year better. And to this point, it looks like they are a year better. And, I think that that's a team that, has really made a bit of a statement here at the start of the season, and that's why they move in at 24. And their upcoming schedule, they get this one home game, and then they play at Southern Illinois, and then they play at Northwestern. But, it's at least they get to hang out in the Midwest versus, having to run all over the country. So I think that, they're used to travel, and obviously these road trips aren't going to be quite at the same level. But I think the Illini are our team that's a very intriguing team, and I think they showed this weekend they can be very offensive, and we know they can pitch a little bit. So it's a group that I think they can make a run at the top of the Big Ten.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think one thing's for sure at this point, and that's that we're not going to have any more chalk through 17 weeks with these top 25 polls.
Schedules are back.
Yeah, now that conference schedules are back, and J.J. Cooper's back, everyone. now that they're back, there are going to be a lot of changes, a lot of fluctuations in this poll, and probably some long nights on the phone arguing over who should be number 15 and who should be number 16. But that's the fun of it, and we're always going to be here on Mondays to discuss it and break down our rationales behind all these moves. But Teddy, heading into this week, is there anything else that you wanted to highlight or anything that you're looking forward to this week?
Well, the number one thing I'm looking forward to is the start of SEC play. Mm-hmm. They'd give us two top 15 series this weekend. That's going to be very interesting to see. We already mentioned Kentucky and Arkansas, but Auburn and A&M, they match up, and those are two teams off to great starts that are going to be facing the best competition they've seen, kind of by a long margin. They've both tested themselves to a certain extent, but this is going to be, a really big series for both teams to show, whether they, just how good exactly they are. Those are two teams we like a lot. And Casey Mize, I want to mention, coming off of a no-hitter.
No big deal.
It was an incredible start against Northeastern. The only blemish on it was an error. He didn't walk anyone because Casey Mize doesn't walk people, just pounding that fastball. So it's going to be very interesting to see him match up against a really potent Texas A&M offense that dropped 19 runs on Long Beach in one of their games. And, Long Beach is not as good this year as they were last year when they, hosted a super regional, but that's still a team that knows what it's doing on the mound, and A&M had no problems with that. So I'll be interested to see them match up. And speaking of Casey Mize's no hitter, Hofstra threw another no hitter. That's two no hitters in as many weeks for Hofstra, which in program history, they believe they had never thrown a no hitter before last week. So, very impressive from Hofstra, and they're actually leading the country in runs allowed. They have the best runs allowed margin to this point. It's been a very, very nice start for the Pride. And two no hitters in 2 weeks. I mean, that's just special.
It's a lot to be proud. A lot to be proud of. There's no question there. And the number of there have been a lot of no hitters to this point. I mean, we've had as many no hitters as cars that Oprah gives away on her show.
You get a no hitter, and you get a no hitter, and you get a no hitter.
It's been pretty crazy. But yeah, Teddy, I'm with you as far as these SEC conference plays starting this weekend. I'm excited about those series. I think we're gonna hopefully learn a lot more about some of these teams, and especially you mentioned Auburn and Texas A&M. I think that's gonna be really cool to see them go against the best competition that either team has faced to this point. So that's gonna be a lot of fun. For me personally, I want to take a good hard look at Louisville. Now that we've seen they've passed that test against UNC, I want to see how they do on the road in the ACC against Wake Forest and just see how they're doing it, because as we mentioned, it's an entirely new core, a new nucleus, a new everything other than the coaching staff there. So I am really curious to see, what's working for them. And I also want to take a good look at Riley Thompson, too, on their Sunday starter at this point, a guy who's been hurt the last few years but who has an electric fastball. And, there's a lot to like there in Louisville, and so I'm going to take a good hard look at them. But, going forward, this is the big leagues now. We got conference play going. There's going to be a lot changing. It's going to be a really exciting few weeks here. So please be sure to stay tuned with our coverage. You can follow Teddy on Twitter at Ted Cahill. You can follow me at Twitter at mlanana, and you can go on our website and view our rankings, our roundups, our features. We have a lot of content coming your way. So we want to thank you again for joining us in this college podcast. We want to thank JJ Cooper for joining us today, and we want to thank Health IQ as well. Our college podcasts are sponsored by Health IQ. Health IQ helps health conscious people get lower rates on their health life insurance. Visit healthiq.com/BA to see if you qualify.